The Poorly Made Police podcast is for entertainment purposes only. This podcast has explicit content and is meant for a mature audience. The views expressed on this Poorly Made podcast reflect the opinions of the guest and host. They do not reflect the opinion of any department or entity. Nothing on this Poorly Made podcast should be construed as legal or marital advice. If something offends you, I kindly invite you to lighten the fuck up. If you want to support this very poorly made podcast, click the link at the end of the description and become a monthly sponsor of the podcast. Or buy yourself some nice Poorly Made Police Memes merch. Not only does it look good on you, it's also a favorite of wives, exes, children, nurses, nuns, IA investigators, defense attorneys, and the chief. And of course, take care of the fine sponsors of this podcast. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy the orgasmic sound of a Crown Vic. Yo, hey there. Welcome to another fun, exciting, action-packed edition, spicy edition of the Very Poorly Made Police Memes podcast. I am your host, Lenny. How the fuck are you guys? I hope you are doing well. I think this was almost a real podcast. There were topics. It was enjoyable, and the turntables were turned on me. This podcast, I talked to my good friend, the staff assistant, a.k.a. Dr. Ashley Massimino. Sorry if I butchered your name, Ashley. I can't talk. It's not my fault. And her partner, Ali, come on the podcast. She's a psychologist. And she has a great podcast herself that I was actually on 6 months ago. And she's really one of the real ones actually out helping cops. So we talk cop mental health. We talk social workers in cars. And then what I asked her to come on and talk about and help me work through some of the stuff was our homeless issues. So it was a really enjoyable podcast. I think you guys will really like it. She's a great guest. Ollie's funny as shit. But before we get into the podcast, I got to give big thanks to the folks that make every Sunday podcast possible. And I'm staring at the beautiful mug right now. It's my good friends over at officerprivacy.com. Now you may ask yourself, Lenny, why do I need officerprivacy.com? Well, I can tell you, I am a happy, satisfied customer. My information was once on these people search sites, and now it's not. What officerprivacy.com does is scrub your name from these top 30 people search sites. And so when you're involved in one of these critical incidents and the news media gets your name and then the Twitterverse and the Redditverse look up your information, you're not there. You don't have to worry about people coming to your house and bothering your wife and kids or your husband and kids or your grandparents or your mom and dad or your aunt and your uncle. You don't have to worry about the news reporter going over to your mom's house and asking how she raised such a horrible son or daughter. It's where officer privacy is important. They take care of your privacy. One less thing to worry about. Now, I know people that listen to podcasts aren't cops. Got a crazy ex? If you don't, you're going to, probably. That might not be real statistics, but it happens to people. People have stalkers. People have all kinds of things. I mean, think about identity theft. Officer privacy is not just for cops. It's for everyone that's concerned about their privacy. So go check them out, officerprivacy.com. They're on Instagram. They're on Facebook. They have my glowing endorsement. Well, before we get into the podcast, I just wanted to remind people there's a few more spots open for the one-year anniversary episode to the podcast. If you're interested in being on the podcast and part of the podcast, there's a code word on the prior podcast with my buddy from South Dakota. Get that code word. Make sure you're available during the prescribed time, and you can be a guest on a live recording of the podcast. It's either going to be the best podcast I've ever done or the worst. It may be a train wreck. You can't look away, but I guarantee we're going to have fun. Probably. 60% sure. Well, anyway, I'm going to stop blabbing. No music because I'm lazy. And we will be right back with the doctor. All right. And now the moment you've all been waiting for. Who would have ever thought I would have a doctor A doctor is in the house, in the dungeon for the podcast. I have the one, the only, the staff assistant, Ashley Massimino.
What's up, Lenny?
I'm just living a dream. And thanks for getting my name right, because I know last time we spoke, I was Larry.
Well, they both sound like pretty white names, so.
Okay, before we even started recording, she's like attacking like the white guys, like we all look the same. Okay, so what is true? So what, we think mayonnaise is spicy? Leave us alone. It's not our fault, okay?
I really like mayonnaise, so I'll claim that part of my whiteness.
All the things I thought we would talk about, mayonnaise is not one of them.
She puts a lot of mayonnaise on stuff. It's disgusting.
All right, so when I go, do you go to Subway?
Fuck no.
Jersey Mike's.
Jersey Mike's is legit, but Subway, I don't care what anybody says about Subway. Okay, so Jared raped a few kids. That doesn't reflect all, oh my God, on Subway all the way. I worked at a Subway and it was like the best fucking job ever. And maybe that's why I liked it, because we had a lot of fun. Turns out it later closed, probably because we had too much fun. But the mayonnaise at Subway is delicious, and I drench my sandwiches in mayonnaise. Might explain why I'm fat also.
I wouldn't know, since you won't let us see your face, so I can't comment on
You've
that.
Seen my face. You've
well,
seen.
Well, it's been so long. You know what? I looked at the date that we recorded your podcast. I think it was January something.
It was a while
this,
ago.
Of this year. It seems like it was last year.
How many sandwiches ago was that?
That was a lot of sandwiches. Do you dip your french fries in mayonnaise?
I'd rather dip them in a milkshake.
I'm like 50-50 on that. If we're going to be honest, I used to actually mix ranch, or not ranch. I used to mix mayonnaise and ketchup.
And I used to mix salsa and ranch.
Really?
Yeah. Try it at a Mexican restaurant. It might blow your mind.
That seems right. I'll do like sour cream and salsa. That's like my favorite thing to do.
It's similar to that.
I would say like ranch is the way to go with french fries generally, unless the ranch is too spicy, as a white guy like me would say. All right, we are way fucking off topic. So Ashley interviewed me on her podcast sometime. And it was a very therapeutic experience for me. And I promise the reason that you're on my podcast is I'm not trying to get free services again. I just want to make that very clear that I didn't trick you on the podcast so I could, have some free therapy. But before we get into everything, would you just tell the millions of followers a little bit about you and what you do?
Sure. So I'm a clinical and forensic psychologist in California, and I work for the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. I also have a private practice, and my partner Ali and I My partner Ali and I have a podcast called the Staff Assistant Podcast, which you were on. And we're really interested in just helping our coworkers, have better lives, live better lives, not commit suicide, not suffer, with drinking and drugs and marital issues. And we've just seen too much shit go on with our coworkers. So we're really trying to be proactive and helping the community.
I like that you guys are doing it. And, my podcast, I talk to guys all over the country, and it is kind of therapeutic in a way, but you actually, when you talk to the people on the podcast, you kind of really get into things and kind of prod a little bit. Initially I was like, God, this is uncomfortable putting it out there. But, like I said, it was a very therapeutic thing. And so I think it's really great for, there's been a lot of people on that podcast that are, big tough guys. And then you get them on your podcast and it kind of, I don't want to say you break them down, but I guess it just really humanizes that everybody's going through this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't have to be someone that is sort of insta famous or someone that's more well known in our community. You could give me anybody, any boot on the ground, any patrol officer, that's just the normal, Joe Blow, and bring them on the podcast, and I could definitely show you their own history of trauma, their own critical incidents. They have a story. Everybody has a story. And I want everyone that comes on to experience what it does feel like to see a therapist. And also I want the listeners to be able to experience what it might be like to go to a therapist. And so that is the function of the podcast.
I don't know why my mind's going here, but is it weird for you to be sitting in the chair? Because now I'm in control.
No, no. But I think probably I know that maybe you're not as savvy as like psychologically savvy as maybe another psychologist would be. So I don't,
I might surprise you. I mean, I'm stupid, but I might get you to say something uncomfortable. That is my goal today. Now, I would
like to ask you though, before we move on, because you mentioned you did get a lot out of the podcast when you came on, is since you've been on it, like, how do you think it's helped you? And has it helped any of your listeners? And maybe just what you did get out of it.
See, you're turning the tables already. Okay, folks, she is smarter than me. I would say for me, what I got out of it is maybe I hadn't been really being honest with myself for a while about a lot of things. And it kind of opened the floodgates as far as, hear me out on this, but it brought back a whole lot of stuff that maybe I didn't want to deal with, but now I had to deal with and I dealt with it. And, you know, it's been a process, but I think since that point, I've recognized some things within me where I'm like, all right, this is shit I got to work on. And as far as your other question, I did have several people reach out and say, hey, you know, I've been going through, you know, the same type of stuff. It was nice to hear that I'm not alone in all of that. And I think that that's the important thing, I think, is that you're not. It doesn't matter. And something I wanted to get into later is, I think sometimes people are like, well, my trauma is not as bad as other people's trauma. And so they don't think it's actually trauma, which is really not doing anybody any amount of good. I don't think anybody that's been in a more traumatic incident than me is saying, well, yeah, this guy, he hasn't been through what I've been through. Fuck him. That's not the way it works. And I think sometimes people get in their heads that way. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah. I mean, I have clients who will say that to me that aren't in our field that have had horrific trauma, like horrific sexual abuse during childhood. And they'll say, well, my trauma is not as bad as so-and-so's. And I just look at them and I say, your trauma was horrific. It's okay to think that, you know, people, it's harder, I think, for most people to embrace that the trauma does impact us no matter how bad it is or how bad it's perceived to be. So that's just a common thing among humans, I think.
Wait, are you saying that humans have things in common? I didn't think that was a thing anymore. I was pretty sure no one had anything in common anymore and we all hated each other's guts.
It does seem that way.
I guess since we're here, I'm going to ask it and we can dive back into other things. But I don't know. I've just kind of noticed this. I call it like the social media, like Jerry Springer world that we're all in. Is like we all grew up watching Jerry Springer. Like everyone will deny it. Everyone watched Jerry Springer or Maury or something like that. And that's honestly to me what social media is. And I feel like it's melting our brains. I mean, is there like a social media, I don't know, I guess the best way to put it, like mental illness that you're seeing?
There's definitely a impact on attention and concentration and focusing. I've noticed myself, I'm 42. I got my first smartphone when I was 31. And I haven't really read a book since then. Let's put it that way. So the ability to sustain attention beyond, you know, a 30-second clip or a 60-second clip or a 5-minute clip, like for someone to watch a 5-minute clip online is sort of a miracle. And to sit down and read a book start to finish almost doesn't happen anymore. So I've noticed that I've adopted the, you know, cell phone free Sundays from time to time. And those days that I do put it down, I'm actually able to read a real book. So I think in that sense, that's definitely impacted. I think kids are beyond impacted. We're shaping their ability to sustain focus for a long period of time or to learn to be bored or be uncomfortable. So yeah, for sure.
My kids, we can't go on a 30-minute car ride without like they want, you know, cell phones or video games. And you have no idea what family vacations were like in the 90s.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, what we did for fun is we hit a curb and we'd knock each other into the window. And if, you know, we got bored, okay, look out the window, count train cars, count cattle, like do something. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting to watch. And I'm, I don't know if concerned is a thing, because I think society, well, concerned is a thing, but I don't know if concerned is the right way I feel about it, but society's changing. And I think that's, it's always been that way. I mean, like the wheel, you know, only existed for 1,000 years. Right. So, you know, what did the parents say back? Like, you know, and whenever the wheel was invented, like, look, you know, the Johnsons, they have a wheel, but we walk because we're the Bernards or whoever, you know. I'm sure it's been that way forever. There's always changes in, you know, technology and changes. And I don't know why I went with a wheel. That was a little far back. I mean, sliced bread, right? Sliced bread is new.
Pizza? So
pizza. I mean, you know, spaghetti hasn't always been around. Lasagna. Mayonnaise. We haven't pineapple, had mayonnaise, you know.
Pineapple on pizza.
Yes. Well, okay, let's hold on. Forget everything we're talking about right now. Why don't people like pineapple on pizza? It's so good.
Listen, if God wanted pineapple on pizza, he would have made it that way.
He did make it that way because it's on there.
It's an abomination.
Fucking how dare you?
You are fake news.
I don't care, man. I'm like half Italian. I don't give a shit. I will make a proclamation right now. I declare pineapple is perfectly fine on pizza.
So do you have these like go ready buttons over there with your little programs that's already programmed into them?
It's a little, I do it a little lazy. I basically like steal sounds from, I mean, I borrow sounds from the internet, and mm-hmm. I have this little program that I can click on. I know some fancy podcasters have buttons they push, but it's on a computer program.
Okay.
I like turtles.
See, I like turtles. Okay, we were talking about something, not about pineapple on pizza.
I can't remember.
Totally belongs. It's whatever. We're talking about. It's not important. But I guess for me the social media thing, and I don't know. You guys are from California. You're familiar with K-Rock. Did you guys grow up listening to
Kevin Bean and Loveline?
Okay, yeah, I grew up listening to Loveline. So Dr. Drew and Adam Carolla have had a profound effect on my life. And I recently discovered they have a podcast together, which is just, it makes my life complete, because I fell asleep listening to Loveline, you know, when I was in high school. And now I can fall asleep listening to Dr. True and Adam Carolla. It's wonderful. But listen to my podcast first and then go listen to theirs. But
Ollie's a big fan of Adam Carolla.
Oh, he's fucking great. I love the Ace Man. But Dr. Drew's been talking a lot about narcissism. And he equates it more like, you know, it's kind of gotten worse, but I kind of look at the social media thing. I mean, like, I run a meme page and I fucking get likes and I'll raise my hand. I'm probably a little narcissistic, I guess, but people just get on that shit and it's just like a me thing. And I don't know if what your thoughts are on all that stuff. I mean, I don't think that's good for us either.
Well, you have sort of a classic diagnostic narcissism, and then you have sort of the narcissism that Dr. Drew sees in the celebrity community, which I think a lot of celebrities maybe are exhibitionistic. They like to be watched. They like to, you know, be the center of attention. And so those are common qualities with a narcissist. Like, the best person I can compare a narcissist to, and I'm not allowed to diagnose anyone I haven't treated, is Donald Trump. Very charismatic, likes to be center of attention. Sort of well-liked, but maybe a fragile ego, you know, gets offended very easily.
You always are fake news.
but we all have a little bit of narcissism in us. And I think social media definitely brings that out. You know, Ollie and I both have teenage kids, and to watch them constantly taking selfies everywhere we go, we just look at them and we're just like, wow, you know, like, are you an alien? Like, who does this shit? Constantly taking selfies is probably the definition of teenage narcissism.
Yeah, I might have that problem on Snapchat, but it's just weird shit. I don't know if that counts or not, but
I'm taking a picture of yourself.
Oh yeah. Like if I'm some weird situation or mowing the lawn, just to my friends though. Is that weird? It's a little weird now that I say it out loud. It's a little weird.
I want to follow you on Snapchat so I can see what you look like.
You already know what I look like. You
that was so long ago.
What really disappoints people is that I think they come on the podcast and they're like, oh cool, I'm gonna fucking finally figure out who Poorly Made Police Memes is. And then they get on Zoom and it's like police memes, and they're like, fuck. Finally thought I was gonna make it, and it didn't happen for us. I'm totally deleting all that Snapchat thing. People are gonna think I'm even weirder than I am.
No pressure.
So one of the things with law enforcement is alcoholism, to take a jump from narcissists and Snapchat. Have you noticed that on the rise more or less, or what's kind of your perceptions with, I mean, and I guess I was going to kind of dive deeper too in the last couple of years with all the, you know, exits and trauma in law enforcement. It just, do you think that we're kind of starting to get a hold of the alcoholism, or is it kind of the same as it always has been?
I don't know what Ollie thinks. I don't notice any differences. I feel like it's always been pretty prevalent in our department with our coworkers. It seems to be the most common thing that people like to do when they're together. And it's the, besides tobacco, you know, it's the only legal drug, you know, that can help with your anxiety that you're allowed to take. So I get why people drink. They can't do anything else about it. But at the same time, people don't go to therapy and they continue to drink. So, you know, like Aaron Lohman always says, you know, you got to take charge of your life at some point and start making healthier decisions. And it doesn't take a lot of sessions of therapy, especially if you go to someone good and you go to someone that knows EMDR, you know, you can walk out of there in a couple of sessions and be fine. So
when you said EMDR, just for everyone, because I don't know what that means, what do you mean by that?
EMDR is a type of therapy. It's a newer form of therapy specific for trauma. It's called eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And we use bilateral stimulation, meaning we're stimulating both sides of the body. So we can do that with eye movement. We can do it with tapping on both sides of our body, like on our chest or on our knees. And with the bilateral movement, in conjunction with talking and processing the trauma, it really resolves a lot of the strong negative emotion that's associated with any trauma or even just reducing anxiety. So it's if someone's a first responder or they're in law enforcement and they have a lot of anxiety or they have a lot of trauma, that would be the form of therapy I would suggest. And many practitioners use it. So it won't be hard to find someone.
I don't like how this became a personal attack, because anxiety, like, I'm going to be honest, man, a Busch Light is like the best, like, easy, you know, anxiety medication for me. And so I was going to ask you, in your mind, and I know it's different and maybe like a sense as far as like a different type of physician, but what is an alcoholic? You know, is it like, oh, beer a night, you're kind of turning that way, or, you know, beer, you know, a couple times a week, or, you know, is it like getting pissed drunk every single night? Like, what is an alcoholic in your eyes?
Well, this feels like a little bit of an interrogation, like I'm on the stand.
I'm turning it against you now, because you outsmarted me before. So it'd be a battle of wits.
So to diagnose someone, technically, they'd have to develop tolerance. So you're having to drink more to get the same effect. That's one way you could define if you're an alcoholic or not. Another way is if you have withdrawal symptoms. So if you stop drinking and you start getting, you know, the shakes or any other sort of withdrawal symptoms. Or thirdly, if it's impacting your life, meaning you're calling in late for work a lot, you're missing work, you're going into work drunk, you're getting a DUI, you're getting in trouble at work. So if it's impacting your life or you are developing tolerance or withdrawal, that would be the classic diagnostic criteria for alcoholism. But I think people know if they're honest with themselves, if they ask themselves, like some people just drink way too much and they can handle way too much. And just because they can handle it doesn't mean that it's good for them.
Now, what effect of being Irish does that have? Because it's not really my fault. It's my DNA.
So are you claiming to be like half Irish, half Native American and full alcoholic?
I didn't say full alcoholic. You did. Okay. Not me. I'm a mayonnaise American.
How much do you drink? Let's break it down.
Oh boy. Now it's the turntables. I would say podcast nights. Sometimes I get hammered, but it's because I drink a lot over, like, you know, 2 hours. I have 3 to 4 drinks, which isn't a ton. Like, Dickens are, for some people, that's a lightweight. It actually reminds me, I'm going to start a new bit on my podcast. I was actually going to ask your professional opinion. I was going to get, the breathalyzer. I actually ordered a cheap one on Amazon for Prime Day. and I was going to have people guess my BAC at the end of the podcast, but maybe that's not healthy.
Probably not.
I'm probably still,
you still haven't answered my question.
I tried. I would say I probably have a beer night. Podcast days, a few more. If I'm mowing the lawn, I'm fucking red-blooded American. I'm having a few more. But I mean, do I think I'm an alcoholic? No, I don't get the shakes. I don't need like any more to get going. But I would also say I probably drink too much.
And what
that,
makes,
like,
what makes
but I say that in a sense of like, it's probably making me fatter than I should be. But I don't think it's negatively affecting anything, which is probably something every alcoholic says. It's not a problem. I have no problems.
Well, also it depends. Like maybe your loved ones might say something different, you know? So if they look at you and they're like, no, he doesn't drink too much.
Well, I would call my wife, but I don't want it to get awkward. Moving on, less about me, more about
you later.
You know, actually to talk about you a little bit, because I have this written down and I neglected it early on because we started talking about mayonnaise, but I like to ask the cops that come on, you know, what got you into law enforcement? And so I thought it'd only be fair and interesting to ask you what got you turned into, you know, the mental health side of things.
That's a great question. Well, I was an undergrad student and I was undeclared for my first 2 years. So I always tell people it's okay if you don't know what you want to do in life. And I was basically threatened by my father to pick a major and not to pick a dumb major, pick a good major, like a dumb major, like, you know,
dance therapy.
I don't know. Yeah. Like Parks and Rec. Yeah. Something that doesn't lead to great income. And so I picked psychology because I just enjoyed those classes. I had no clue that I was going to become a psychologist. No plan to either. I guess the short answer to your question is I feel like there are certain things like a path that you're led down. And I feel like I was kind of led down a path, maybe, you know, divinely led down a path. And I just ended up at a really great graduate school and it just happened to be the perfect place. And I didn't know before I got there that it was the perfect place. And they trained me up and off I went. So here I am. I don't know if it answers your question, but.
No, I think that answers. I think a lot of people I've talked to in law enforcement, you know, for me, it was like my dad was a cop and I saw him be a cop and I'm like, I'm gonna fucking be a cop, you know? And for a lot of other people, it's like, hey, I saw, you know, this, you know, same story, my dad or a family member, or, you know, I was involved in something and the cops were really cool. And then some people are like, I had no plans on being a cop and just life led me that way. So I guess my thing on cops is frequently the cops kind of think, and maybe you have something to say about this because you talk to them so often, but cops think that the problems that law enforcement faces are only problems they face and they don't realize the rest of the world still has the same issues.
Right.
And I don't know that, I guess that's, I don't know where we started with that, but yeah, that's kind of something I've observed is that, you know, we have the same, you know, infidelity, alcoholism, you know, suicide, the general population kills themselves too. It's not just cops. It's not just cops that drink themselves to death for a bad job. So it's, there's other professions that can be a calling, you know, teacher, firefighter, for some reason, you know, Jersey Mike's worker, any of that stuff, it could be a calling. So I guess for you, would you say that this was a calling for you, you think?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like I am where I am. It's where I need to be, but I feel like I could have been a lot of other things and been good at those. I just didn't go down those paths. Like there are oftentimes I feel like I could have been a great detective, or I could have been a, like NCAA basketball coach, or I could have been a teacher. And I think I would have enjoyed all those things too. But I think this is the best place for me. And just going back to your point about other professions, absolutely. There's organizational betrayal that occurs in lots of other sectors of business, not just law enforcement. There's all sorts of organizational related issues. So law enforcement is not special, but I think we, in this field, experience certain things more than the normal population.
You said that, and it kind of sparked something in my mind, because I've said several times, and I think even a week ago, I said something along the lines of, you know, we have people promote, you know, into law enforcement, into like, you know, they become a lieutenant or a captain or whatever, but they were cops. So they have no idea how to manage. They've never been in a HR type position where they've had to deal with that. And then as you said that, I said, wait a second. Well, we're going to use the theme of Jersey Mike's, right? So you got some guy that, you know, the week before he's making sandwiches and they're like, hey man, you're not a fucking idiot. So we're going to make you an assistant manager. And now all of a sudden he has these other responsibilities that they're like, all right, this, here's our training book. This is what we do. But how does this guy at Jersey Mike's know how to deal with, you know, coworker disputes, or, you know, somebody's not showing up to work on time, and how to deal with all those things? And I like that you said the, there's other organizational failures in other professions. I mean, sure. We all have friends outside. Oh, my boss sucks. So I think that's something, I guess, one of my, I guess, points I brought up over time, and hopefully I can get the point across, is don't get me wrong. Like, there's some shitty leaders in law enforcement. We've really seen it the last couple of years, but we're not alone. Like, no, at all.
Look at the government right now.
What? The government is perfect. Everyone gets along and they have totally the best interest for the people. They're not doing it for themselves at all. What are you talking about?
We're not going to go down that.
We'll talk about government failures in a second, actually. Okay. One of the things I did want to bring up as far as getting cops into therapy, I know at least for me, and when we talked about it on your podcast, you know, when I was in high school, I was kind of saw a guy, and it wasn't kind of on and off. I should probably preface this. I kind of saw a therapist, not a guy, but I thought it was funny. Nobody laugh at my joke. It's fine.
I was trying to process what you said. I don't remember you telling us that you went to therapy in high school. Did you?
I did. I did tell you. You don't even care about me. I thought you cared about me.
Ollie, this is why I was listening to the podcast before we started. I was actually reviewing it because I'm like, I need to refresh my memory.
Oh, I'm not that important. But I did. I was in high school. I had some anxiety things, and my parents, you know, sent me to this guy. And I went to one guy, and I was like, this guy, I couldn't talk to the guy. Like, I didn't feel comfortable with him. And then I ended up going to another guy, and he was big into sports, and we talked about sports the whole time. And he probably was Jedi mind tricked on me like you are, but it's good. Like, it was a good experience, you know, as young meme lord. But I was going to talk about, I think sometimes people go to therapy and then maybe they don't hit it right off the bat with their therapist. Sure. And they're like, nope, therapy is fucking not for me. I'm not going to go. Do you have any words of wisdom out there for people that have gone to therapy? Yes. And they're like, nope, this is not for me. What would you say to them?
I would say there definitely needs to be a goodness of fit between the therapist and the client. And there's a lot of factors that go into what makes goodness of fit. And when you think about, you know, your pickiness in terms of who you get along with in terms of your friends or even your partner, and I mean like your romantic partner, like there's very few people in the world that would be eligible to be your romantic partner because of the things that you want your partner to be. So the same is true for a therapist. I would give a new therapist maybe 3 sessions at least, like weekly sessions, to try it, and absolutely let the therapist know it's something that we do want to hear, and it's something that we care about is goodness of fit. So if you feel like it's maybe not the right fit, I would talk about that with the therapist and just thank them. Don't ghost them. Ghosting is something that was invented with online dating. It has nothing to do with professionalism or medical services. So you don't ghost providers. You let them know that you don't think it's a good fit and you look for someone else. And there's a lot of other factors in terms of, are you ready for therapy? You know, you may not be ready to go. And are you in a stable enough place in your life to go and do some work on yourself? Are you open enough to go? So there's other things to consider. And I've had people tell me that after one session. I've had people tell me they want to try it out for a few sessions. And then by the third session, they're like, we're good. I feel comfortable. Let's move forward. And I'm like, great. Let's move forward.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't go on a date and fall in love on the first date. Well, some people do.
That happens to some people.
Did you guys fall in love on the first date?
What do you think, Ollie?
Next question.
I got my porn music in. That's all I cared about this podcast. Here's something that is interesting that came across the page, and I've been waiting for the right moment to bring it up, and this is the right moment. I made a meme, and I wish I even remembered what it was, and it was something about mental health, and some guy comments on there. He's like, you know, these therapists are all trash, and I'm not going to get into heaven and hell here, but he's basically like, if you're not finding help through Jesus, then it doesn't really count, and it doesn't matter, and you're not actually mm-hmm. going to get better. Do you run across that a lot?
You know what? I didn't grow up in a religious home, but I did start going to church, and I became a Christian in high school. And I encountered that a lot in churches from pastors where they would directly preach against man-made intervention. You know, they would quote different scriptures to prove their point that, you know, the philosophical ways of the world are from the devil, and psychology is part of that. And, you know, you need to seek pastoral counseling or Christian counseling. And so that mindset definitely does exist in the world. I don't think it's as bad as it was, you know, 20 years ago, but people seem to be a little bit more open to seeking care now. But I think it's really just ignorance. They don't understand what therapy is. And a lot of people don't understand what it is. And that's exactly why we're doing the podcast, is each episode that we do is intended to show the audience, this is what the first session would look like with this person. I'm going to take their history. I'm going to review their trauma. I'm going to get to know them a little bit. And those are what my first sessions do look like. And it's what they sound like. It's pretty much verbatim what I do. So trying to educate people in terms of what is actual therapy. And in fact, on our last episode that we did, episode 31, I demonstrated an EMDR technique to reduce anxiety. It was just a meditation. We did some tapping with it, some bilateral stimulation. And so I'm hoping that, you know, as we do more episodes, we can introduce more techniques like that that people can just use on their own.
So what you're saying is I should not crack open this beer and I should go listen to that podcast. Got it.
Crack it open. I've already had a Hawaiian mule earlier today. So
a what?
A Hawaiian mule.
What's a Hawaiian mule?
It's like a cocktail. It's a ginger beer with some pineapple juice. I think Malibu rum.
That sounds good. Yeah. This is going to sound really shitty for an alcoholic, but my wife got one of those like pre-made Moscow mule mm-hmm. things, and I never actually had one before. Holy shit. They're really good.
I haven't tried them.
It's like the Cayman Jack ones.
Yeah. I've really seen those.
I don't know. I'm to jump a little bit back into the alcohol thing. Like, I don't advocate alcoholism because a lot of people, let's be honest, man, it kills a lot of people through, you know, dumb accidents or fucking, I mean, liquor's not good for you. It's essentially yeah. poison. So, but with that said, I don't know. I don't want people like, well, I'm never drinking unless it's you. I mean, I think there's some people that should never drink again, but I think it's okay to have a drink every once in a while. I think it's good to loosen up, but there's definitely, like everything in this world, there's a balance, which seems to be really hard to find. I think for whatever reason, our society seems to like really sway left or right or back or forward. And we can't just kind of get the gauge right in the middle of perfection, but that's probably a story for another day. But going back into the religious aspect of it, that comment really blew me away, because that was something I never experienced before. I couldn't believe somebody yeah. thought that, like, somebody's going to get help and you're saying, well, mm-hmm. this isn't help, this like gatekeeping help, is that what we're fucking doing now? And I guess my question to you, just out of my own curiosity, is there other types of stuff where people are like, nope, therapy doesn't work, let's do this goofy shit? I mean, what kind of stuff have you seen?
Well, there's a lot of people that believe in like the Reiki stuff. I don't even know how to say that word right.
I don't even know what that is.
You know, like they believe in crystals and those, they claim that those calm them down or brings them good energy. I'm trying to think of anything else strange.
What show was there? Like, kind of, it was kind of a joke in the, oh, I think it was actually Trailer Park Boys. I know you're probably people of culture. I don't watch Canadian trash television, but I feel like that was
never even heard of it.
You've never heard of Trailer Park Boys?
No.
Ollie, come on.
I've never seen a single episode, but I think it's on Netflix.
What the fuck? Okay. This is what I need you guys
to
do.
That took too long. You need to work on your timing.
I'm moving from different... I'm alone here, okay? And I was going to edit it out, and now I have to leave it in because you made a good joke. Fuck you. Okay, I totally lost train of thought there. No, but seriously, like Trailer Park Boys is... To me, that's almost like therapy. There's actually... Here, let me talk about this. I don't know if this is a thing. You say if this is actual good therapy or not, but I'm assuming you've never heard of my other favorite show, Letterkenny.
No.
Oh, Ollie...
What? Say that again?
Letterkenny.
What language is he speaking?
Too much beer.
Jesus Give your Christ. Balls a tug, you tit fucker.
That's from Letterkenny. So it's more Canadian TV. Apparently I'm part Canadian too. But there's an episode where the main character, he's kind of going through a rough breakup, going through a bad time. And he sits in his shed because he's Canadian. And he watches his old favorite show from when he was a kid. He gets through the whole season of it. And it makes it. Everything's better. He just has to watch it, feel good, and makes it better. So when I go through and I watch all 9 seasons of The Office within a 2-week time period, is that real therapy?
You know what? Okay, so let's break this down. You're okay. Talking about different self-care things, or maybe coping skills, we can call them, or self-care. So we all have different things that we do. We, Ollie and I, we really love to be in the water. We love to go to pools. We love jacuzzis. We like to go work out. So for us, that's our self-care. Those are our coping skills. Like that's what we want to do when we have free time. But you're talking about connecting with a positive memory from the past. And so, you know, the pop word for that is what, like nostalgia. And so you're connecting with a positive memory from the past. That's absolutely therapy. And I could see why that would bring you into a better mood. And if I listen to music from, you know, high school, college time, absolutely, it'll boost my mood.
I'm hoping you've heard of this next band.
Did you just crack open a beer?
No, I farted. I cracked open a beer earlier. I'm drinking the... I know this is really white trash, but I'm really like hooked on the Mountain Dew hard seltzer.
Oh,
it fucking tastes like Mountain Dew. It's so good.
Does it have a lot of caffeine in it too?
I have no idea.
Oh,
I have no idea. I haven't really noticed that I'm more hyped up afterwards or before, but no, the last movement was just because I'm fat. But Pink Floyd, The Wall. You guys have heard of Pink Floyd, The Wall, right?
You're getting way too white now. You're leaving our atmosphere.
Come on. Everybody's listening to Pink Floyd, The Wall. Well, anyway, that is like anti. Like if I listen to that album back to front, not like an individual song, mm-hmm. but if I listen to that song, that fucking album back to front, I am like insta-depressed for a week.
Mm.
Yeah.
What's it associated with for you?
I don't know. I mean, it was like around high school time, and like high school, I think my high school time was kind of the same as everybody else. Some good, some bad. I don't know. I mean, it is kind of a depressing album if you listen to it. And I don't know if that's why, but it just like totally fucking buzzkill for a week. So I've been trying to avoid it, but it's really good. So it's like, you know, take the good with the bad. I don't know.
Did you have a teacher that didn't leave you alone?
You're getting really deep here. No, that was a good reference though. But no, I didn't have a teacher that didn't, I can't remember that if anything like that.
Is that a molestation joke in that song? You know,
I've never thought of it that way. I might have to listen to it now just to, I don't think so. How do you get that?
He literally says, "Hey teacher, leave those kids alone."
Yeah. Cause he's fucking bothering them.
He's bothering them. You want to know what the Spanish word for bothering is?
What's that?
Molestar. What does that sound like?
All right. Yeah. I mean, that's actually like, I was in the gas station today and there was, how did you say that word? Molestar?
Yeah.
There was definitely an old man molestarring a young gal working at the counter. That's for sure. I wish I could talk about it more.
If I listen to Counting Crows... But that was from like high school when I was a little depressed. And so I will get depressed if I listen to that. So maybe you were dealing with some negative emotions in high school.
That could be. I'm gonna have to think deeply on why that affects me. But I was not molested by a teacher in school. Thanks for asking, Ollie. I think that is really, like, if you watch the video to the song, it's clearly like just the, or like listen to the rest of the lyrics of the album, it's just a fucking teacher beating the shit out of him, I think is all it is. But I mean, maybe they went to a Catholic school, I don't know.
Yeah,
but I don't have that sound effect. I used to have a little drum here, but I broke it, so don't get mad at me, Catholics. I'm Catholic too, so I'm allowed to make Catholic jokes. A really bad Catholic. All right, we've talked too much heaven and hell. Here's my next question as far as law enforcement type stuff. So everything's, and I know law enforcement's kind of ever-changing, and there's been some shit the last decade or so, but really the last 2 years, it's been crazy for law enforcement, yeah, so to speak.
Shit, I mean, storm.
Just a total shitstorm. I mean, like, one fucking thing after another, and they will do anything to fucking shit on cops, no matter what it is. I didn't finish the article because I'm like, why am I reading this? But I saw an article in a local news publication in Denver, and I don't know why the fuck I was even reading it, but it was, this guy had been fired as a cop in two different cities, and he now got a security guard license in Denver. And they're like, well, why is this guy that's been fired as a cop getting a security guard license? Is this fucking news? He's a security guard. It's not news, but it's anything law enforcement, man, is that's fucking, like, everybody hates cops right now. It's a fucking popular thing. You know, imagine the meme. Oh, what is it? It's Ben Stiller. What's the movie? This is white, more white stuff. I'm usually on the ball with pop culture references, but now
I'm not. Meet the Parents?
Zoolander.
Zoolander,
where the Will Ferrell character is like, you know, whatever's hot, so hot right now. It's like, hating cops is so hot right now. It's been that way for like 2.5 fucking years at this point. But have you noticed an influx of more mental health type stuff with cops? And I know, you know, you kind of have the small corner of the world, but I mean, what's your thought on that? Do you think there's more cops now are experiencing mental health stuff? It kind of feels that way for me. But then I'm also thinking at the same time, parallel to this, is we've kind of humanized that a little bit more, and the stigma's not gone, but I think it's better about people getting mental health help.
My understanding is that the added scrutiny of the public and the hostility that's coming from the media just adds another layer to an already very difficult job. So I just don't think that's helped. And I don't know that more people are seeking treatment, but I do feel like the stressors have continued to pile on, and there's definitely been some new stressors, you know, in the last few years.
Yeah. And it's tough because I guess social media wise, and, you know, me and you have somewhat of a presence on social media, and I guess just to kind of call out some people on social media, is they kind of talk out of both sides of their mouths when it, to me, at least when it comes to resiliency, when they're like, hey, go get help or whatever. And they will be the first fucking people to dogpile onto somebody. And I'm like, why are we fucking eating our own like this? I mean, like, it's one thing if it's like an obviously like a wrongdoing, but I think anybody will see it. I mean, like, yeah, I make memes and I make fun of cops and law enforcement and stuff. And I mean, it's silly pictures. And I guess somebody could maybe accuse me of, well, you know, you make memes about detectives being fat, or you make memes about this or that. Okay. Fair enough. You know, I guess I'll eat some crow with that. I'm still going to keep making memes, but I don't know. I feel like we've gotten really good at, you know, saying, hey, speak up if you need help, but we're not doing any better as far as like fucking eating our own. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's a misnomer, I think. It's a balance. I always think about Aaron Lohman because he's always one to push people to take care of themselves better and to take accountability and responsibility for themselves. But at the same time, when someone's really depressed, specifically depressed, not anything else, that person's not capable of asking for help. They've probably already become very isolated and withdrawn. They've probably stopped interacting normally with other people. And not only are they not going to be able to make a phone call, just to pick up the phone and call, they're not going to be able to verbalize to anybody how bad they're doing. And so it really is the burden of us as their coworkers to come in and to check on them, to pull them out, to push them to get help. So I think it's a balance. And one example I'll give you is I'm familiar with a lot of our peer support teams in my department. And, you know, the peer support teams function as a bridge to help push people into treatment if they need it and to give them resources. And many of the peer support people themselves on the teams have never been to therapy. And yet they are the ones encouraging coworkers to go to therapy. And so my new stance is, if you're on peer support, I'm going to encourage you to go to therapy to experience what it's like so that you can actually recommend and talk about what it's like to someone that needs to go.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And full transparency, besides trying to milk you out of it a second time, I've only gone to therapy once, and I'd say it's your fucking podcast. Besides, you know, as a kid.
Wait, you never went to therapy after the podcast?
I said the quiet part out loud. No, I didn't. And not because I felt weird or bad about it. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to be fucking flat out honest. It's a money thing. Here, I'm just going to fucking full transparency for everybody. I won't even edit this out. I'm not rich by any sense of the imagination. I'm not like fucking poor either, but I have four kids, and mm-hmm. I thought about it long and hard, and I said, hey, look, I'm not great, but I'm doing a whole lot better. And I feel like I have these tools now where I can kind of work through these things. And honestly, even through the last week, I kind of recognized some things that were bad and I removed them from my life, and things have gotten better. And I know a lot of my issues, honestly, now is I'm an extrovert. I like fucking talking to people. I like being out and around, and I'm in a house almost 24/7 with a toddler. Mm-hmm. So I know that's like, give it up for your fucking single parents out there. And I've said that a while ago on the podcast, and I'll say it again. Like, it's hard to stay at home with a kid, not like have adult contact. So absolutely. I know that's been kind of tough for me, and then managing all this and trying to make this good. So I kind of made, honestly, it was a monetary decision. I was like, you know what? I'm all right.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to the podcast. I want to talk to you about my buddy Brad Williams over at Police Fit. You guys see him on the page every single Monday on Poorly Made Police Memes. Brad's going to help the new applicants and active officers smash their fitness and regain their health. Brad has 11 years experience in the fitness industry, 17 years in the military, and is also a first responder. He's going to share his experience and expertise to help applicants get their dream job and help active first responders regain their health. That's Police Fit, and I'll have a link for you on the podcast description. Back to the podcast.
I guess this is probably a good time to transition into my own curiosity. I assume this is a little out of your expertise, but maybe it's not. But within the last couple of years, there was kind of this like call, and then it kind of went away. But I kind of thought it was a good idea for some circumstances to have therapists and mental health experts respond to calls, like mental health calls, instead of sending cops. What's your two cents on all that?
I never think someone that's not a peace officer should be put in a situation where their life could be taken. So I think it's situation-based is the answer, but I'm someone that has plenty of experience with crisis intervention. You know, I've worked in psychiatric hospitals. I could tell you that when there's a fire to be put out on whatever unit I'm working on, usually they can't wait for me to get there because I usually put it out without anyone getting hurt, without any use of force being used. So if you take someone like me and put them in a police situation where you know there's no weapons involved, you know that someone's having a mental health crisis, and you have someone with me to accompany me, or you train me even better, you know, to be a peace officer in that situation, with the right equipment, I would feel comfortable going, but that's because I have training to do that. So if there's the right training and if there's the right level of safety in the right situation, I think it could be effective.
I think, honestly, I don't think it's a bad thing, depending on what it is, like you were saying, because I agree with the, you know, cops, you know, we have the vests, we have the guns, we have, you know, that type of training. If it's a threat, I don't want social workers, you know, walking into, you know, guy's depressed and he has a gun to his head. That's not fair. But we frequently, you get calls, hey, you know, so-and-so is nonviolent, no issues, but, you know, they're not going to work and, they, you know, they're not taking their medication. I want you to come over and have them take their medication, which can't, you can't make people come. Word of the wise, you can't make somebody take their medication, which we'll get into that in a second. But I thought that's not honestly like a bad idea because it's not a criminal act. This isn't a crime. It's and look, all kinds of crazy shit can happen. We never know, you know, what's going to happen. But if you're playing the odds, most of these times, you know, you go talk to them for a minute, you leave, and it's not a big deal. But the cops aren't doing anything to help that situation. There's basically taking a resource off the street to go to a more serious call to go, you know, check on somebody that really needs mental health help. So I always thought that was a good thing. I know of many departments where, you know, they're putting a clinician in a car with a cop. Mm-hmm. I think that's fucking great. Yeah. I think that's a phenomenal idea, but it, the thing is people want these things, but then they don't want to pay for them. And I think that's the issue too, is all this shit costs money. Like it's not free.
That was going to be my next point. Do you know why they always say send social workers and they never say send a psychologist?
Why?
Because social workers are master's level clinicians, so they can get paid less. And the people that are accompanying the police officers on those mental health ride-alongs, which many, many cities are already doing that and have been doing that for years, those are usually interns. So they haven't even gotten their master's degree yet. And they're working for free. So the people that are doing these types of jobs already are the lowest level paid or lowest trained in our field. They're not sending out, like, what department besides LAPD and LA County Sheriffs, and I think Dallas has started hiring psychologists within the department for the officers and for calls. I don't know of many departments doing it. And if they are doing it, like where we used to live in Orange County in Southern California, they use interns. They use master's level interns, meaning they have not even gotten their master's degree. They will become social workers, but they're not psychologists and they're not the highest trained in our field. So they're not using the best resources available already just to save money.
Interesting. I honestly hadn't really thought too much about it to be, and I don't, you know, I'm ignorant, you know, layman. I didn't really know the difference, you know, as far as, you know, the level of degree and training and stuff. And I had no idea a lot of them were interns. So that's kind of concerning too, because you're sending them out to,
sure,
maybe some really fucked up situations.
Sure.
And not a static environment. So before we move on to, you know, one of the things I'm really interested in as far as a bigger topic, but do you know anything about the 988 thing? What's that all about?
I think they were trying to find a simpler way for people to call for help when there's a crisis, a mental health crisis. So I know that the old number, like the Logic song, the 1-800 number, that number is still going to work and it will route you still to the new people. But you can also just dial 988 and it's meant to be the new suicide crisis line nationwide. Okay.
So that, like, the 988 line is not going to like a local jurisdiction unless, you know, whoever answers the phone goes, hey, this is an emergency, and then they transfer it over.
I don't know who's answering those calls, to be honest. And do you know anyone personally that's ever called the suicide crisis hotline?
I personally know, I've been on a call where there's several calls where they're like, hey, they called the suicide hotline. Now you guys come and M1 them. And, you know, in Colorado, I know it's different in other states, but in Colorado, it's, you know, mental health hold. And it caused a landslide of problems. Because in M1, you know, I looked at it the same way as like probable cause. Like, I'm taking your freedom away if I'm making you go to the hospital. And it was, and I can't speak for other states, and I don't know if they've changed things in Colorado, so maybe this is old information, but firefighters, paramedics, EMTs, they couldn't do an M1. Cops could, and psychologists could, and I think maybe social workers could. And so I always thought that was fucking insane, because my department, I thought we were pretty well trained up. I'm not a fucking mental health expert. And I got to be honest, reading the statute on M1s, you put a lot of fucking people on an M1. Are they capable of taking care of themselves? Everyone on the street is, to me, is incapable of taking care of themselves and making good decisions for themselves. You know, yeah. Failure to thrive type thing. So you could M1 the whole fucking homeless population in one foul sweep.
Sure.
And that's just my way of looking at it. I don't know how it is in Cali, but that's kind of opens Pandora's box there, because I don't know. Again, I can't speak for other states, but it's really strange to me that cops are the ones making this decision on somebody's mental health on the street. So you get this phone call with a suicide hotline guy, right? Where the guy's like, we get a, you know, call from some rando to dispatch, hey, this person's, you know, wants to kill themselves. You get there. If they're not relaying the same information, it can be kind of tough to put them on an M1 unless you can actually get a hold of the person you were talking to on the phone, or who was they were talking to on the phone. So it was just a mess. And I wish there was a better way to handle it.
Well, you're tapping into an issue that I know you eventually want to discuss, and that's the balance between respecting the rights and the autonomy of someone, you know, to not take their medication or to live the life they want to lead, even if that's a life where they're not taking care of themselves, versus forcing them into a hospital setting. And I think state by state, it's different. But clearly we're seeing the impact now of, you know, leaning more towards the civil rights of the mentally ill versus, you know, how we're operating in society and just allowing our cities to crumble.
I guess since we're here, let's talk about it. So I don't know, a couple of days ago, I was thinking, I've brought this up several times on the podcast. I feel like we're failing the homeless population. And I said, man, I really want somebody to talk to on the podcast about this type of stuff that, you know, is a mental health expert. And then it just instantly dinged. I'm like, oh, I know who to fucking ask. And you were really gracious. And you're like, yeah, I'll come on and talk about it. And just to kind of preface all of it, my beliefs probably changed over the last 10 years. You know, I think you get older and you see things for what they are. And, you know, some people get kind of weird about like, well, you're changing your opinion on things. I think that to some extent that can be growth. Like you kind of start to see things for they are. Mm-hmm. When I was on the street, I would just see, you know, the homelessness, you know, the thing, the popular opinion is homelessness is not a crime. I agree to an extent, but we're being ignorant about what the real issue is we're basically letting people that have mental health issues and addiction issues, and mm-hmm. sometimes both, live in filth on the street, like a third world country. And it becomes kind of a tough question. What do we do? You know, some people say, well, they need housing. And then I've seen that where people that are not capable of caring for themselves, they get free housing and they destroy it and they burn it down. You know, they use, you know, all of a sudden you got all kinds of crazy stuff happening in those apartments. It's not good. You know, you can't have the chicken before the egg. It's probably a bad mm-hmm. analogy. I don't know. But so I was really curious about the history of it, because I know back 100 years ago, back 50 years ago, if somebody had a mental health issue, they're locking them up. So yeah. I thought, well, who better to kind of walk us through a little bit of the history and then kind of where we're at now. So I mean, what do you know about like the institutions back in the early days? Like how did somebody end up in them?
You know, I don't know that the answer to that specific question, but just looking back at the history, at least in California, and I think it varies state by state, but California's probably spearheaded this a little bit. Ronald Reagan was once our governor, and in the late 60s, he passed a bill, and this was during the civil rights movement, called the Lanterman-Petras Short Act. And it basically deinstitutionalized all the state hospitals in California, meaning that they were all going to shut down, or most of them were going to shut down, and that they wanted people to be treated in the communities that they were from. So instead of being sent away to a hospital, they wanted people to be treated in the least restrictive setting. So maybe in a board and care setting or in a skilled nursing setting or somewhere in their local community. But the failure came that when the state hospitals shut down, there were no community centers to pick up the pieces. And so you start seeing spikes in homelessness in the 70s and in the 80s. And then with the rise of the crack cocaine epidemic in the 80s and all of the new drugs that have been introduced since, I think it's just been like a very slow tsunami. And we're finally seeing, you know, how it's impacting our cities. And then even now with, you know, Starbucks announcing it's shutting down stores in LA and in Seattle, you know, that says something. That's a very liberal company for them to do that, to protect, and they're doing it to protect their employees. Says a lot about what's going on in those cities.
Yeah, and it's tough. And I was kind of talking before a little bit about the balance where sometimes good intentions, maybe it was well-intentioned, but we do these well-intentioned things, but we don't think about the consequences, or we don't follow through of what we're gonna do. And I think that's just kind of been the history of man.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought I was really smart, and I was like, oh, the issue is we closed down these places and now, you know, these folks have nowhere to go. Turns out I'm not the only one that thinks that way. There's a lot of people that think that way. And it's tough, right? Because I'm a, you know, firm believer, and I'll be honest, like I lean more to the conservative side of things, of people's individual liberties. You know, who is to say that they can't live on their own? But then it's kind of clear, like, hey, these folks need help. And so it's kind of hard to say, who makes that determination?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Who gets to decide, you know, if somebody's freedom is taken away for not committing a crime and not just not being able to take care of themselves? It's really a tough balance. And I guess my first question to you, and I'm sure this will kind of go all over the place, but is there a movement to try and kind of bring that back a little bit, but maybe different than it was, you know, cause I don't know. There's all, you know, the horror stories and the weird, you know, shit they used to do to people. I mean, kind of bring that type of thing back where people can get better. I mean, cause treatments are obviously better than they were 50 years ago, but to actually institutionalize people that can't take care of themselves. Is there a movement to bring that back at all or no?
The pendulum always swings, but I don't think it's swinging back in this case. And I'm not sure why. I think if you look at things from different perspectives, it sometimes helps. So I think if we all look at like the homeless population, like we were just in Skid Row in LA a few weeks ago, and it's just horrific how many blocks, like block upon block upon block of just the mass homelessness going on there. It would be easy for us to look at that and say, for those people that are mentally ill or drug addicted, let's just grab them up and take the addicts into a detox and take the mentally ill and put them in a hospital and give them all the medication they need. Like, we don't have an issue doing that because we see what's going on and we see that they're not in their right minds, but here's a different perspective, right? And who decides that? The different perspective is, okay, let's take our employers. A lot of our employers are forcing us to take a vaccine that we don't want to take. And they're making the call that it's required. And a lot of us don't agree with their ability to make that call. It's not their choice, like who gets to take the vaccine and who doesn't. It should be each individual's choice. So I see things from both sides. Like, I think autonomy is very important and independence is very important. But then you look at someone who's mentally ill, are they capable of rational thought? Are they capable of making competent decisions? Most of the time the answer is no, but then who makes that call for them? So
that is an excellent point. Like, I have this whole system set up in my mind, but what I think doesn't matter. You know, I kind of look at it as, and this is just like, you know, utopian bullshit, because this is never going to happen. But you could, you know, we have mental health courts. You could put something in statute and, you know, essentially maybe even a 3-panel judge that everybody kind of looks at everything and says, all right, yep, this guy can't take care of himself. And it shouldn't be a forever thing. Cause you probably know better than me. Me personally, I think everybody to an extent has mental illness, you know, cause when you talk about institutionalizing things, I mean, like I know several people that have anxiety issues. Are we going to start fucking locking people up with anxiety? I don't know.
Right.
Right.
We're talking psychosis. Right.
But it gets concerning, right? Like, oh, well, this, you know, this guy's kind of an alcoholic. Maybe he can't take care of himself. Let's lock this dude up.
Mm-hmm.
It gets, you know, cause let's be honest here. The government's not always here to help. And so we talk about this balance, and sometimes we'd worry that it would get just out of control, which it probably did. And that's what kind of caused a lot of these closings. But, you know, my whole idea is, you know, a panel, you know, you take a look and it's almost like you have to have probable cause. Like, all right, this guy's lived on the street for this long. He's, you know, not taking care of himself. You know, he's defecating in his pants. You know, we take him to the hospital 3 or 4 times a month. He can't take care of himself. All right, bada bing, bada boom. Probably that's probably not what a judge would say. Let's take him to the hospital, right? And then, you know, we can reevaluate, kind of like parole. Like, all right, we'll reevaluate this in a year, see how he's at. Maybe we can get him, you know, back out and rehabilitate him. But it costs money. Like, that's the crazy thing. This is a unicorn because it costs money, and no one's ever going to buy off on that.
Yeah.
Which it's really... I don't know. It's hard because we consider ourselves, you know, a first world country, but we're not. I mean, let's be honest. Well, maybe that's a bit extreme, but I mean, we literally have people on the streets living in squalor. I don't know. I mean, does that happen other places? You know, I know I have international listeners. Maybe it's a thing everywhere, and it seems worse to us here because, you know, we observe it here, and, you know, that's everything that happens in America is on the news. I mean, you know, nobody gives a shit about England except the Queen.
It is getting worse, though. I mean, I think there is poverty everywhere, and I think we're pretty fortunate to live where we live. But it has grown noticeably worse in the last few years. The level of violence, the homelessness, the drug addiction. A lot of it is because of the prisons being emptied out too. You know, and then COVID emptying out prisons more. So we're definitely seeing an increase in those things.
We're going to get the COVID label on this, but I don't give a shit. Word to the wise. If you see the COVID label on my podcast, I probably said COVID one time and then they put the label on the fucking thing. We don't talk about COVID the whole time. So stupid, but
safe and effective.
Yes. Safe and effective from the guy, dude. It was horrible when I got it, but anyway, we let everybody out of jail because of COVID, because we didn't want people to get sick with COVID. And then they went to the street and they intermingled with each other in these fucking camps. And it was kind of mind boggling. Like, that's the decision we made. Like, we let people out of jail, supposedly dangerous people, people that needed to be in jail for a certain amount of time. We let them out. Like, it boggles my mind. And I'm kind of surprised in some places, like, I don't know about California, but they're still doing the COVID restrictions.
Yeah.
Fuck, what are we doing? I don't know. It's mind-boggling. So yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think it has gotten worse the last couple of years because of that. But I don't know. I mean, you know, from your standpoint, do you think there's a solution to this? Or are we just going to kind of keep continuing the circle of we're just not going to deal with it and whatever happens, happens?
I don't think a lot of people say, you know, the whole revolving door of mentally ill, you know, going to jail or going to prison is a problem. I don't know that it's such a big problem. If you actually work in some of the jails or prisons, you'll see how well staffed they are now with mental health professionals. You know, there's psychiatrists, there's psychologists, there's social workers, there's recreational therapists, there's psychiatric technicians. I mean, all levels of training in there. So I think once the law enforcement pendulum swings back and they start actually, you know, enforcing the enhancements again, and they start enforcing the 3 strikes again, and they start actually locking people up and keeping them in jail, they will get the treatment that they need when they're there. So it's almost like we didn't shut down the state hospitals. We're just pushing the people around into different places, but the treatment is there. So I don't know if there's an answer. It's a big problem. But a lot of people come to prison or jail and they're sober. And sometimes those are the only times that they're sober. And there's plenty of drugs in prison. You know, if you've ever been inside one, it's pretty rampant, but it does provide a more controlled environment where it's a little bit harder to get the drugs. So a lot of people do experience a prolonged period of sobriety for the first time when they're locked up.
Am I off base? But in my humble opinion, look, are there some homeless people that are, you know, just kind of down on their luck? Maybe a few, you know, out of work. Most people, and I could be way off base. You tell me if I'm wrong. I know if I went through a hard time, I wouldn't be homeless, because I know there's people I could fall back on, you know, my folks or friends. That doesn't happen for everybody, but my, you know, there's this narrative out there that, you know, we have people homeless that are, you know, just kind of down on their luck and because of the economy. To me, I think that's just, you're not telling people the truth. From what I've seen, it's not people down on their luck. It's addicts. Almost everybody that's homeless is an addict. I mean, am I off base with that?
No. And most of them are dual diagnosis. So, you know, whether they were mentally ill first or used drugs first, and now they're mentally ill because of the drugs. I mean, there's all different combinations, but yeah, that's absolutely true.
From your standpoint, let's just go with the person that is mentally ill now because of the drugs. Is there coming back from that? I mean, I've heard that, you know, the drugs now are more potent than they've ever been. And so it's really altering people's, you know, their brain composition, essentially. Is there coming back from that? Or essentially, if you've been on long enough, you're done, like you're not going to have a normal life.
I think the tendency is the longer you've used and the more chronic the use is, the less likely it is for you to regain whatever baseline functioning you had before. But I have seen people come back. There was a man I treated at Patton State Hospital, and he had been using meth. And I think he had rigged up what the police described as like a bomb in his house. And I don't know that it actually would have exploded, but there were plants and there were wires and the pilot light was on, and he was carrying around machete in the middle of the street, and he was arrested, and he was very paranoid. He was delusional. And fast forward 4 years, when I met him, he was getting ready to be released to a conditional release program. And I was doing his risk assessment, and he was in his complete right mind. All of that was in the past. And over time he had regained, you know, he had gotten back to his baseline, but that's pretty rare. And I haven't seen that very often. Most of the time you'll see some people with minor cognitive impairments where they're not the same anymore, but it's not like they're high all the time either. And then there's some people that just can't, like they've totally decompensated and it's like their brain has turned to jello. So it just depends on what they're using and how long they've used for and what their predisposition is.
I think I'm probably preaching to the choir here, but you know, we hear this thing like, oh, you know, the drug war, we shouldn't shame people on drugs. And it's, maybe we should shame people on drugs. They're killing themselves. They're altering their brains. Yeah. Why? I mean, I know it's not going to do any good to scream and yell here, but it drives me insane that people are like, oh, drugs are fine. Drugs are cool. And it's not a big deal. I mean, like, I don't know. Everybody, I think, equates everything with weed, and they think cops are all after weed. Like, I don't think anybody really cares about weed, even in the states where it's not legal, but have an honest conversation with yourself. If you smoke weed every day, you're going to have negative side effects. If you drink beer every day, you're going to have negative side effects. And people act like that's not real, but the hard stuff, like we just fucking ignore the hard stuff. And we just basically, again, it's a societal question we have to answer, you know. Is it on us to take care of people? And we're not, you know, we find meth and fucking fentanyl now on people and no one gives a shit. And it boggles my mind that we're cool with it. I mean, I read a story the other day where, you know, some guy had like millions of dollars of fentanyl in New York. They fucking let him out. Didn't even give him a bond. They just let him out.
Wow.
What is happening in our country right now is mind boggling to me.
And that's a completely different issue. That's the whole law enforcement side I'm talking about. Like that side needs to swing back and they need to start prosecuting those things differently. But I will say, I want to ask you a question. And this goes into what you're talking about. Do you have the desire some days to have a beer, just one beer?
Me?
Yeah. You.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like before you decide to have a drink, like there's some sense of I want this or I'm craving this or I think I'd like to have it. Right. Like that exists before the behavior of actually taking a drink.
But I also think the same thing about ice cream, if we're being honest.
Sure.
Or tacos.
Yeah. Any of that. So let's say now let's switch over to like hard drugs, like fentanyl and heroin and meth. Like, you and I, we don't have those cravings for those drugs, right? We don't even
allegedly.
We don't even have the desire to try those drugs.
No.
But why? Why do we have the desire to go have a beer, you know, or go eat some ice cream, but we don't have the desire for the hard drugs?
I don't know. Are you going to school me here? I'm waiting for it.
Yeah, I'm leading up to it, because most people that have experienced severe trauma, they want to escape. And those smaller things, the beer, it's not cutting it. The ice cream, it's not cutting it. And they need something stronger. And so they'll keep escalating until they find something that actually does help. And that's how they end up with the opiates, you know, the heroin or the fentanyl or the meth. And I think really you're looking at a bigger problem of trauma. And this is why trauma-based treatment is so important, is I really believe if I were to pull in any Skid Row addict off the street into my office and interview them on a podcast, and if they were in their right mind just for that, you know, those 2 hours before they started using those hard drugs, I could probably give you a really horrific trauma history. They could share a horrific trauma history, and I'm sure that that's there for most of them. I'm sure there are some people that randomly just try shit. You know, maybe they're partiers and they try something and now they're hooked. But I think that's more rare. I think the more common thing that happens is that people have experienced probably a prolonged period of trauma, most likely childhood trauma. And that ends up leading to addiction most of the time.
I guess why we're talking about it, it kind of piqued my interest as far as, and I'm not an expert on it, but there's been kind of this, I've read this in the news and seen it a couple of places where people get, you know, the painkillers, and then all of a sudden that's turned into an addiction, you know, with heroin and stuff like that. Is that the opioid type stuff? Yeah. Is that something? Mm-hmm. I mean, have you seen that happen with cops? I mean, like, you know, cops get hurt, they get back injuries, they get hooked on the painkillers and stuff like that.
Yeah, they develop that tolerance where those pills aren't working anymore. And so it ultimately can lead to heroin use, even IV use. Just to get the pain under control. And what people don't realize about opiates is it actually lowers your pain threshold. Meaning, let's say you have a knee injury, and let's say you could rank your knee pain like 1 to 10, you know, 10 when it's at its worst. And if you take opiates to treat that knee pain, let's say you're normally, when you get to a 6, you're like, okay, I need a Vicodin. Like, my knee's really hurting. So you take it when you're at a 6. Well, if you take that Vicodin for a month, in a month, when you ask yourself, what's my knee pain? It's at a 6. It's not really at a 6 anymore. Really, your knee pain's like at a 2, but it feels like a 6 now. And so now you're taking it with less and less pain, but you're actually experiencing more pain. So opiates are very tricky in the sense that it's almost like it's designed to lead you toward addiction, because they're not effective in long-term managing pain.
Again, to kind of fall back on a prior thing we talked about, a prior theme is, you know, it's well-intentioned and then they don't study the after effects. I mean, this is a little off topic, but we talked about it on your podcast, and I'll bring it up here, is my mom has some mental health issues, and I firmly believe some things have gotten worse, because the medication she started taking in the 90s, yeah, they researched it, but they didn't research, like, you know, what happens if you take it for 20 years? What happens if you take it for 30 years? So there's always, like, there's no, there's time and place for medication, but that, I think there's kind of always a cost anytime you put anything into your body.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of those medications for bipolar disorder, you know, if it's lithium or Depakote, they actually block some sort of insulin neurouptake inhibitor in the brain. And so people develop like obesity, they develop diabetes, you know, they develop that big round belly that you'll see on some people that take that medication because of the impact of the medication. It's not the way that they're eating.
This is off topic too, but we're going to go here. Are psychologists prescribing less medication now than maybe they were 10, 15 years ago? Or is it kind of the same, but different medications?
We don't prescribe medication at all. Only psychiatrists do.
See, I'm an idiot. I don't know that. Psychiatrists. Now, are psychiatrists, is that profession kind of starting to get away from that a little bit or no?
No, there's very few what we call holistic psychiatrists that actually look at all of the effects of the medication and try to find ways to manage symptoms without using medications that may be more dangerous to the body. So I would say no to that. And that's also why I'm not a psychiatrist. I feel like medication is useful in certain situations with certain diagnoses. So if you have ADHD, if you have bipolar disorder, if you have some sort of psychosis like schizophrenia, those are the diagnoses that really do need some sort of medication intervention. But anything else, the treatment of choice is usually therapy, talk therapy, not medication.
Or podcast, right?
Sure.
I'm taking that as a win right there. One for me, like 800 for you. I'm going to fucking take that one to the bank. Yeah, I don't know if I'm weird about it, but like if I go to the dentist and get some dental work done, they're like, hey, you want some, you know, whatever oxy or nope, fuck no, nope, fuck that shit. And that, you know, that's just my own personal paranoia from seeing that on the street. I mean, I've talked to people in the street that are like, oh yeah, I fucking, you know, went in for the surgery and I got fucking hooked on this shit. And I don't know, is there, maybe you know better than I mean, is there like kind of this movement against the docs doing that shit? Is there like lawsuits and stuff?
Against them doing what?
Like, you know, just like prescribing all the fucking, you know, the painkillers and people getting addicted to it. Or is there
been there's so many regulations now with the physicians that they won't even prescribe those medications anymore. You actually have to go to a pain specialist now if you want those medications, and it's highly regulated. They drug test you, they count the pills they've developed. Even I know pharmacists have developed a system nationwide where anytime a prescription like that is given, it enters this database. And so the pharmacist can check and see if you're doctor shopping, you know, if you've gotten prescriptions from other pharmacies or from other doctors. So they've really tightened the grip on those medications, and rightly so. I think they should be rarely used.
Yeah. And that's, I don't know, that's something I would see in law enforcement, is you get that report of, oh, I was here and somebody stole my pills. Like that, you know, cops around the country, I'm sure a lot of you guys have experienced that shit. And it is what it is, man. People are trying to get more pills, and all you can do is take a report, you know, and say, hey, all right, this is what they said. And I got no evidence to say that it was actually stolen or whatever. But it just kind of goes to show, like, these people, like, it's annoying for us as a cop, but like, you got to fucking take the time to write this report. And, you know, they're just trying to get more pills because they're an addict. I don't know. It's kind of a tough situation that we're in. And now that we've talked about it, I'm honestly more frustrated, because I, you know, not that, you know, we can do anything, maybe we can, I don't know, maybe we can affect some small change, but it's definitely frustrating that can't do anything about it. You know, nothing in this podcast has solved anything. You know, there's still going to be, you know, fellow Americans, fellow human beings that need help, and they're sleeping in a shitty tent outside of a creek, you know, living in their own filth. It's really started to bug me of late. I don't know about anybody else.
Well, because it's intruding, I think, into most people's lives now. I mean,
I moved away from it.
No, well, look, lucky you. We're still here.
Yeah, I moved away from it because, you know, I could go work at a soup kitchen. I could go volunteer and stuff like that. And I think you can, you know, you can be a positive influence on some folks, but it just beyond the, let's be honest, beyond like the human element of like, hey, these are my fellow human beings and we're watching them essentially decay. It's also like, I also don't want to be around it. I want to drive to work and not see, you know, some guy taking a shower on the side of the road, you know. I don't want to see people shitting, you know, people shit on the streets in San Francisco. Like, what are we doing right now? And you brought up the Starbucks thing. I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't know why people experiencing homelessness fucking love Starbucks. They love going in there and causing problems. I don't know why. I'm surprised more of them don't
got
close
good coffee in there.
Come on, is it that good?
Well, if you've ever worked with anyone who's actually mentally ill, meaning psychotic or schizophrenic, they love two things. They love cigarettes and they love coffee.
Really?
Yeah, they love those two things. So it's not a surprise to me that the coffee shops would be impacted.
Yeah, actually, I heard my favorite coffee shop in the the place I used to call home closed because of stuff like that, which is disappointing. But it takes an impact on business. And I, again, that's, you know, the other untold toll on all of this. And I don't know. I mean, like, I don't think there any of our fearless elected leaders are listening to this podcast, but I guess anybody listening to the podcast, before we get into my dumb questions that you're going to be victimized by in a second here, but look, you know, I think as cops and in law enforcement, like, it takes a toll handling these type of calls. And part of it is because they're tough. Like, cause it's like, it's basically, when I say tough, in the extent of, you know, whatever the issue is, whether it's a shoplift or a trespass or whatever, you know, it's just going to happen tomorrow and it's going to happen the next day. And, you know, the criminal justice system's not doing anything about it, but you're still doing the work. But look, we're, as a profession, you know, a lot of us suffer mental illness. So try and keep that in mind when you're dealing with these folks, as tough as it can be. And let's be honest, it's annoying and it's hard sometimes dealing with these folks, but I don't know. They're human beings. And I don't know, maybe I'm going soft on you guys, but it just really fucking bugs me that we just basically leave them to decay and we don't do anything to help them. And we basically go in a circle of whose fault it is. I don't know whose fucking fault it is, but let's stop fucking pointing fingers and actually come up with a solution that is beneficial to everybody. But that's fucking impossible, because that's not what we do. We just bitch and moan about things. And we like the same people to keep making the same mistakes. I could be wrong. I don't know.
Well, I think part of the frustration is that it seems like maybe the work that the officers are doing on the street is for nothing, because it just keeps happening. And then there's no follow-up. There's no consequences. No one's going to jail. No one's getting treatment. No one's going into detox. And so it just keeps happening. So it's like you're on this a hamster on a spinning wheel. And what's the function or the purpose of the work that you're doing? It feels like it's for nothing. So maybe that's part of it. And then the other part of it is the problem is so large. You know, what can you do about it? But I feel like, you know, my work with my clients, and I actually have a few clients who are transient. They have Medicare and we do telehealth sessions, and you know, I treat all different types of people. So I do what I can with the people that I treat. And then I also do what I can with law enforcement and first responders. And I feel like we can only do so much. So if there's a few starfish we can throw back and we can warn people about the dangers of opiates and, you know, warn people about different things and how to seek help and normalizing trauma and normalizing therapy, I feel like, you know, we're still doing a good job. We can't do everything.
Yeah, I mean, there's only, it kind of sucks having the weight of the world on you sometimes. I know a lot of people in law enforcement feel that way. Not everybody. I do. But just remember, there's kind of only that small, you have a small circle of influence. So influence them well, and you can only do what you can do. You can't worry about what other people are doing. So be the best you. That's inspirational, isn't it?
Yeah.
You ready for some dumb questions?
Let's do it.
So we've been talking about, you know, humanizing mental health and making it okay to not be okay. And you're a doctor, so I expect that you have some firsthand knowledge at this and can really explain this to everybody. You're a doctor, so I don't care. You're a doctor. I just believe you're a doctor and you can explain everything, because doctor means you know everything.
What do you want me to do to prove that I'm a doctor?
I know you're a doctor. Good. It's suspense, because you don't know what's coming, but everybody listening knows what's coming. The question is it normal for people to poop their pants?
Wait, did you block me on your story so that we could see the question? So I couldn't see the questions.
I didn't do the questions. This okay. Happens every podcast.
Okay.
We need to know, is it normal to poop your pants?
In what situation?
I don't know. You normal? Let one slip, you go for a hike and, you know, maybe there's no bathroom around, or it just happens sometimes, right? Nobody's fault. You just poop your pants sometimes.
Are you talking
right?
about, I thought it was a fart, but it actually was a shit kind
it
of thing.
It could be a shart, as you're describing. It could be a full blowout. Or is that not normal to that's have a never, blowout?
No, that's never happened. I think I'd rather, you know, pull over on the side of the road and just squat before that has to happen.
So you'd do the San Francisco before blowing out your pants.
I'd find an uninhabited area, just more like camping, camping squat. Yeah.
Okay. But I'm not asking if you've pooped your pants. I'm just asking, is it normal at all? Or is it not normal?
No, it's not normal.
Okay. So what if you're somewhere and there's not any bathrooms and it's a very public situation and you have a choice to make because you know you're not going to hold it any longer?
What are my choices?
Poop your pants or poop in front of a bunch of people?
Poop where?
Just in front of them. I don't know.
There's a bathroom somewhere. Let's be more resourceful and think outside the box. There's a restroom somewhere. And if there's not, I would do like, you know, in California, we have something called beach changing. So you open one of the car doors and then you sling a towel over the rest of it. So you can kind of like change your bathing suit right there outside your car. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I live in Iowa, man. I don't. There's no beaches here. And apparently the one beach they have has brain eating amoebas. So
if I had to like do a beach change poop, like outside my car door, I might do that, but I would still cover myself.
So, all right, you're letting me down, but everybody knows, everybody's, you know, let one go that. Okay,
I'm a lady, Lenny. I'm not just gonna.
Girls don't. I've been married for 15 years, and I don't think my wife poops, so I don't even want to know about it. It's wrong. But let me just throw this out there. I think everybody's, you know, something's. This podcast has really gone downhill, but they all do at this point. Everybody's let one slip. It's always hit the cloth. People are lying if that's never happened to them.
Think for yourself. Keep going.
Okay. Or some people don't have IBS. I don't know. Could just be a me thing. But I'm just saying, shit happens. That's all I'm saying.
Is that related to your anxiety?
Okay. Well, that was where I was going next. Here's what I think I've done. It started out as a dumb joke about 50 podcasts ago, where it was actually another social media socialite, Dispatcher Mo, who I would love to have on again. I don't know how it come up, but I don't know if it was an Instagram question or if I asked about pooping pants or somebody asked and she's like, no, nobody poops their pants. I'm like, yeah, it happens. And so that's been a thing on the podcast is I've been humanizing people shitting their pants. But what I've actually done, instead of humanizing it, I've caused anxiety about it. And now people are pooping their pants because they're anxious because I talk about it all the time. So I'm actually not doing the world any favors.
I don't think that's true.
Oh, it's true because
blame for that.
Oh, yes, I am. Because I've literally gotten messages from people. They're like, I've never shit my pants in my life and I'm anxious about it and I shit my pants. Now, so could they be pulling my leg? It's possible.
You're spreading your anxiety to other people?
I am blessing my anxiety with other people. Spreading is the wrong way to talk about that. Blessing them with my anxiety. All right, enough poop in the pants talk.
Yeah, let's move on.
Let's move on. Although there's no such thing as too much poop in the pants talk. But now I know you're obviously not a patrol cop, but I assume that you know what the best patrol car of all time is, right?
Oh, Lord. The Crown Vic?
Hold on. I'm really slow with my buttons today. Yeah! Ollie, do you got a take on that? You've been quiet.
Sure. Yeah, the Chevy Impala.
It's fucking embarrassing!
Come on, bro, a fucking Impala?
You wanted a different answer. I gave you a different answer.
I didn't want a different answer. I wanted people to confirm my personal beliefs.
Okay.
Is the reason you think that's the best car, is it because of the seats?
They hide farts very well. Actually, okay. They don't hide farts. They live in the car, actually. I made a meme about it the other day. This will come out in about a week. People will know what I'm talking about. The Crown Vic, it soaks in the farts. It has 20 years of farts in the car usually. And every time you get in the car and you sit down, it kind of poof comes up and you can smell the history of the car every time you start it up.
Sounds rich.
Yeah.
That was graphic. Now where we're at with this, the thing I like to ask people at the very end of the podcast is if they have any imparting words of wisdom. And since both of you guys are on, I'll ask both of you guys. Ollie, do you have any imparting words of wisdom for the millions of people that are going to listen to this podcast?
Always wipe from front to back.
Where's the fun in that?
Okay. Never trust a fart.
That is true. True. That's something we should learn on this podcast.
Feelings. Yeah. Feelings. This is something I like to tell people. Feelings are like farts. It's not good to hold them in.
That was a big dad joke there. Very good. Very proud of you there.
Thank you.
I've been meaning to start a dad joke with a podcast. Maybe mm-hmm. I'll start that when I have people guess my BAC at the end of the podcast. Doctor.
Yes, sir.
Do you have any words of wisdom for all the millions of followers of this podcast?
Don't drink when it's hot outside.
No, that's the best time. That's the worst advice ever. Sorry, this is your time to talk, not mine.
Okay. Yeah. I would say don't be afraid to try something new. And therapy works really quickly, just takes a few sessions. It's not going to hurt you to try it and ask yourself what is really the reason why you're not going. And I'm not saying you, I'm just saying everyone listening. You know, what's really the reason why you're not going, and what's stopping you? Are you afraid of being healthy? Some people don't want to give up their symptoms. Some people identify with their symptoms. So just ask yourself the reason. Why am I not going?
Thank you for bringing that up, by the way.
You're welcome.
Because I think people do, you know, we kind of make fun of a lot of things people identify by, you know, but the symptoms of things is, and I make memes about, you know, like, you know, drinking and stuff, and you know how it's kind of a cop thing, but identifying by really toxic shit, is that really what you want? Is that how you want to be remembered? Jim was a great guy, but man, that guy was fucking an alcoholic piece of shit.
Yeah.
You don't want to be remembered that way. All right. Well, on that happy note, Jim, go get some help. Stop drinking. That is the conclusion of the podcast. You guys know what to do. Click the link at the very end of the podcast, and you can be a monthly donor to the podcast. Couple bucks. It makes a whole world of difference. Keeps this thing going. And I got all kinds of fun merch coming out. I got t-shirts, coins, all kinds of good stuff. All that stuff is awesome. It helps support me, and you get a little something out of it. And if you have a picture of you and some of the merch, I had a grand idea for like a poorly made police memes wet t-shirt contest, and then I decided that was a terrible idea, so we're probably not going to do that. Probably. You guys let me know. But you guys have merch, you want to send it out or send me a picture of it, I'll put you up on Instagram, and you can get some clout if you want me to tag you. It helps me out and helps you out. And of course, take care of the fine sponsors of the podcast, because truly without them, I'd have to go get a real job. And everybody knows I'm not capable of that. With that said, remember, go to therapy. Don't be like me. Go to therapy. And remember, I love most of you. Bye-bye.